This is Will Friedle from Pod Meets World. Let's be honest. The 90s gave us some great things. The music, totally rad. The fashion, so fly. Home decor, that's a different story. In HGTV's new competitive series, Totally 90s House, two teams of iconic TV stars take on two homes frozen in time. Paired with HGTV experts, they'll turn dated spaces into fresh modern homes and compete for the ultimate bragging rights. Goodbye, honey oak cabinets. Hello, 21st century. Totally 90s House. Special series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 central on HGTV.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Friday morning. Joe, college football talk, we would normally be all about it right now, and it's gotten me so fired up. I looked at the coaches poll that came out yesterday. I think Tennessee was at 26, I think tied with Boise State. That's got to be the first time, and I don't know, since Butch's year in 2016 where they're close to the top 25.
Is that
the coaches
right?
Poll? I mean, come on.
They're receiving votes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you're probably right. Yeah. That's probably the first time they were RV in the preseason. And it's so like that coaches poll. That's the thing. So it's August 7th. Normally this is camp starting. We've had all the media days, two, 3 weeks ago from all the conferences, camp starting. Preseason polls come out, and everybody's complaining about the polls, even though the polls don't actually have any impact on anything. But very
like
different time.
That's right. No question about it. Let's bring in our friend David Ubben from The Athletic, who covers the Vols. David, how's it going, man?
Going pretty good. Thanks for having me, guys.
No problem. I just have to tell you, I feel like it's my duty. Joe Rexrode last week was called Joe Rule in a press conference on Zoom and is now requested – that all of his cohorts at The Athletic call him that on a permanent basis. So I felt like it was my duty to pass that along to you.
Done and done.
Hope you're cool with that. By the way, Ubben, I'm sure that's a name that you've heard some butcherings of over the years. Do you have a best one?
Well, the most common is probably Ubben, the long U.
Yeah.
That's the one that's probably, I'd say 70% of people, the first time they say it, drop the long U, but I've got an Urban, I've got an Oven, I've got an Evan. It's a rough way to go most of the time.
I thought Oven might be one of them.
Yeah, cause... I mean, I feel your pain. There are people, like, they look at my name, Robbie, R-O-B-B-Y, and they'll literally be on Twitter typing something to me, and they will spell it R-O-B-B-I-E. And I'm like, you're literally looking at my name. It's the world we live in, David.
I suppose.
So, David, obviously some big news coming out in college football over the past week with Big Ten players, Pac-12 players putting together some lists of requests and demands from everything from COVID-19, health concerns to racial issues. What have you made of that, and what do you think it says about college football players and the time we're living in with the voices that they have nowadays?
It's really interesting because it's all sort of inextricable, with obviously, the sort of racial movement in America, and then the virus sort of impacting everything and showing players just how much impact they have on their campuses and how much what they do sort of balances out or I guess lifts economically not only their campuses but their communities and obviously and when they have that much influence or when they have that much impact, they'd like to have some influence as well. And they're, obviously, specifically right now in the Pac-12 and to a lesser extent the Big Ten and last night the Mountain West, they're exercising that. And so, between players wanting to be heard and impacting their campuses to players realizing that they would like a little bit more. I mean, again, I just think you think about all the millions upon billions of dollars that have poured into athletic departments and have – gone into slides, that have gone into brand new lockers, that have gone into coaches' pockets, and all this. Think about all that money year after year after year that just sits in universities because they have to spend it because they're a nonprofit. And if that money had gone into the black community instead, just a portion of it, think about the changes that could have been made. And I think that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's the thing about college athletics is, you know, there are a lot of opportunities that are dependent on football money, right? I mean, you know, there are other sports, and you have to provide a certain number of sports to retain the nonprofit status. But I think that's something people miss is, in a way, this is like hiding money. I mean, that's really, I mean, it's not quite like the show Breaking Bad where you're cleaning money with a car wash, but it is essentially hiding money to maintain that status, which, and if you didn't have nonprofit status, and some legislators over the years have brought that up and threatened it, I mean, that would completely change everything.
Yeah, and I think, you know, so much of the virus issue goes back to that because, you know, they are nonprofits, but they don't have a reserve of money. If you have a reserve of money, you're more likely to be faced with lawsuits, you know, challenging the definition of amateurism as the money has exploded in college sports. So when you don't have that, now all of a sudden you're in a budget crunch. And this is sort of why I'm not really, you know, the sort of, you know, cries of we're broke. They kind of fall on deaf ears for me because this is they're broke by design. They live paycheck to paycheck by design in college athletics, and that's just sort of the entire structure of the entire sport. So when you need some extra money, I mean, if you needed $50-60 million sitting around, which they could easily have found over the last 5, 10, 15 years, they need it right now. They don't have it. They don't have it because they didn't want to have it. And now when they need it, they don't have it. So it's just, I mean, the whole thing is kind of gross. And I think the average person, I'm not sure, understands the economics of an athletic department and college sports in general, because it's pretty frustrating the closer you look at it.
David Oven from The Athletic on the line with us. And David, you and Andy Staples came out with a really interesting piece about the gap between Tennessee and Florida, and Tennessee fans painfully aware of the dominance that Florida has had on the field during the last 15 years. What were some of the interesting things that you two found out in that piece?
Well, I think you look at the, you know, the on-field results with Tennessee and Florida the last couple of years, and you look at the rosters, you'd be surprised. I mean, Tennessee played their worst game, you know, the last 2 years, I think even probably worse than Georgia State against Florida. But you look at those two rosters, there is not that much difference. You know, Florida is a little bit stronger in the front defensive front seven. That's where you see a big gap. But pretty much every other position, they're really close to one another. I mean, Tennessee had more talent at 4 of the 10 positions. And so, you know, I think that's, you know, it sort of points to the idea that this gap between Florida and Tennessee is more, you know, mental or coincidental than just this huge talent gap. And I think, too, for Tennessee fans that are, you know, wondering about the status of the program, Florida's won 21 games the last 2 years, you know. Tennessee has won 13. Well, you're not that far, you know, away from getting into that double-digit win zone. Probably not in a year where you're only going to play 10 games, if that, you know, like 2020. But in general, you know, the roster is in good shape. Certainly playing a tough schedule doesn't help. You've got to, you know, be better, build some more depth, develop the talent that you have. But Tennessee is, you know, a lot closer to being a good program than it might look like on the field.
Now, don't tell our Ari Wasserman I said this, David, please. But over that period of time, you can look at recruiting rankings and everything, and you can also say maybe coaching has something to do with the difference on the field. I'm just throwing that out there. Please don't tell Ari I said that.
I don't think so with Florida and Tennessee. I think there's development issues, and then Tennessee, you know, in 2018, they just absolutely, you know, kept, you know, they lose the turnover battle 6-1. And then the year before, I mean, in 2019, I mean, they just got killed on the line of scrimmage. You know, they were getting dominated. Jerick Antino was running for his life. Meanwhile, Kyle Trask has an hour to, you know, sit back there and you know, throw a little picnic for himself. So it's tough. I think, you know, obviously Tennessee's had some development issues, but the Florida-Tennessee gap is odd to say the least.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm going back a little bit and just take another shot at Butch Jones. I know it's too easy to do
brick
that.
Brick by brick, but, baby.
I'll stop now. Oh, yet another piece today, David, at The Athletic. Really interesting on Trey Smith. And that's, first of all, a guy of high interest to me in terms of where we are right now. The decision to, you know, looking at his health. And of course, he's had the blood clotting and he's got certainly, I think, an NFL future if he can stay healthy. But you also, you talked to Dane Brugler, our outstanding draft analyst, about Trey, the, you know, how attractive he is, and then some other guys too. What were your big takeaways from that?
I think the biggest thing is, you know, I don't expect Trey Smith to opt out, and I think that there's a lot of reason for him to not, but there's a lot of risk. You know, if he doesn't as well. But, you know, the big thing is Trey is, you know, he's a guy that is a top 20 pick sort of talent. I mean, you know, he could be even higher if he has a great year in 2020 and, of course, stays healthy as well. But you look at the rest of the roster, you know, I think Josh Palmer could make a lot of money this year if he has a big year. But, you know, I think there's still – you know, a lot of guys that, you know, came in with some good recruiting rankings that aren't going to leave, you know, and be super high draft picks. But you look beyond that, you know, you look at the underclassmen, you look at, you know, an Eric Gray, you look at Wanya Morris, you look at Henry To'o, you know, a Darnell Wright, Alante Taylor, Bryce Thompson. I mean, Tennessee, they've got a lot more talent in these 19 and 20 classes, you know, to a lesser extent to 18 than they do in this sort of senior class. You know, Trey Smith is kind of the lone standout, and it's not that impressive beyond him. And I think that's what stood out to me. Is I think you look at the 2022 draft, the 2023 draft, you know, and where Tennessee is at. I mean, you can sort of see the talent wave coming for Tennessee. You just have to keep recruiting, keep developing.
Yeah, Dane wasn't super high on Jarrett Garantano, I noticed.
Him and everyone else, I think. I think it's like, you know, with Garantano is an interesting guy because the tools are obviously there. You know, he looks like an NFL quarterback. He's added some weight this offseason. He's got a big arm. But, the production hasn't been there, the accuracy, the decision-making. He's obviously frustrated Tennessee's coaches, getting benched a year ago. I mean, it's weird because all the pieces are there. Just the production and the consistency are not. And I'm sure he's frustrating for NFL teams as well. But, you know, I still think, too, you know, some NFL team is going to fall in love with all those measurables because he has some of those things that a lot of guys don't have. And he's going to be really fascinating as he goes through the draft process next year.
David Oven from The Athletic has been our guest here on Morning Drive. David, thanks so much for joining us, man. We appreciate it as always.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Absolutely. David Oven, one of the best in the business. Jared Garantano. Not very popular. Garantano.
Oh,
it's changed.
Yeah.
I caught myself.
Disrespect.
Oh, man.
The disrespect.
Oh, well, you disrespected Brett Kern earlier, so I figured I'd throw out some disrespect to somebody else. That's fine.
Yeah, Garantano, he's I thought it was a great story last year. I thought after the Florida game, we would never see him take another snap for Tennessee.
Yep.
He came in that Kentucky game. I went to the Missouri game. He was terrific in that game. He had some great moments. It's a good story. His teammates love him. He's got to get a lot better to me. If this season happens, better than 5-5 hinges on him doing some things that we haven't seen consistently yet.
No question about it. When we come back, what are the pros and cons to starting Pecorine in Game 4. We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
It's going to be a tough decision to make. We have not made that yet. But the good part of that is I think you can't go wrong with either guy. So both of them give us a chance to win, but we do have to make a decision, and you have to have different factors that come into it. How, you know, you go through Juice's first three games. You know, how is he at? Where's Pekka at? We haven't practiced in a few days. So, you know, there's all things you want to be able to consider. It's not just a decision that that you take lightly. I think you weigh all the factors, and then you ultimately have to make the decision. So that's where the goalie situation stands.
That was John Hines talking about the goalie situation heading into Game 4 for the Predators against the Coyotes. Welcome back in. Morning Drive, Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad. Joe, as I was thinking last night about Game 4 in terms of the goalie situation, I think it's more likely we see Pekka today than I ever did for the second half of the back-to-back Game 3. I think Saros played so well in Game 2. It's a 1-1 series at that point. You're feeling good about yourself. I feel like Saros was going to get that. I think we both said 90-10 in terms of our percentage chances that we thought Saros was going to be in. I'm more in like the 70% range now. I'd still lean Saros, but I think there's a shot Pekka gets in there today.
Yeah, I'll go solidly 75-25 on that. Yeah, which is that's a 15% move from 2 days ago. And I think if it's done, I don't think there's much about Saros' performance that has to do with it. I think we counted up earlier in the show 2 goals, right?
Am I
missing one? Yeah, I'm trying to think.
Well, like I guess you could count like the second goal Arizona scored in garbage time.
In the last minute.
In game two. Yeah, you probably should stop that. But
that's true.
Whatever.
Yeah, if you want to go technically the goals he's allowed, you could quibble with 3. Again, he's put in a situation of defending a breakaway on the penalty kill.
It's hard to quibble
on the power
with
play.
That
I'm sorry, on the power play, a shorthanded goal. He hits a cheapie and the second one in the last minute, hits his glove, gets through, and then Taylor Hall, yeah, you hope he bails out Craig Smith yesterday with the idiotic penalty and stops that Taylor Hall shot unchecked from the left circle that just snuck between the pads there. So it's not about Saros to me. It's about does Pekka Rinne starting in goal give this team any kind of a jolt? Because the floor and the ceiling are more dramatic for Rinne than they are for Saros right now. Rinne has done things we don't know if Saros can do or ever will do.
Right.
Will Saros be a Vezina candidate or winner? Will Saros go on the road in a playoff series and shut out the number one seed on a team that has multiple rings as Pekka Rinne did 3 years ago? These are things we can't say Saros can do. And so we know, and even this year in this really down year for Pekka Rinne, he's had moments of brilliance.
Yes.
So you could say that the ceiling is higher. You could also, though, I think no question, say the floor is lower, that his bad moments, and we've seen a lot of those this year, can really kind of get out of control at times. It's almost like
that early. Edmonton game, it was a storm, man. And it was never ending.
And game 7 2 years ago in the second round against Winnipeg. You have those two. So if you go there, now all of a sudden you're opening yourself up to that. How much of a jump do you get, if you get any jump, from switching? I don't know.
Let's go to Nate, who wants to weigh in. Nate, thanks for calling in to ESPN 102.5 The Game. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I was really hoping that y'all were going to say, well, Pekka's been there before. Because I feel like a lot of people are going to say, well, yeah, he's a vet. And he's been in the playoffs before, but this is nothing like we've ever experienced. So you can't really put that, Pekka's technically been there before. Do y'all understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I do. Yeah. I do. So what you're saying is,
how do y'all feel about it?
So what you're saying is, well, some people would use the experience thing, but this is a different experience in the bubble and everything. Is that what you mean?
Exactly.
Yeah. And the thing is, Saros now has more experience
with
Pekka.
It. Yeah.
I mean, Saros is the more experienced goalie in weird bubble land than Pekka is. So, you can say Pekka Rinne has 89 playoff starts. He's done amazing things in the playoffs. So he's dealt with the pressure of these moments. Today is more pressure than UC Saros has ever been under.
He's never been in an elimination game.
He's never started an elimination game before. So you could look at that and say, well, Pekka has been there. Pekka has won those games before.
Yeah. He's lost them, too.
He's lost them, too. But he came back here. I'll go back to my first days in Nashville. He came back here in a game 6, and he stepped up big when he hadn't been playing well to beat the Ducks.
Yep.
And then he went out to Anaheim in game 7. and absolutely was a superstar, and they advanced. And then, you know, a few weeks later, Game 7 in San Jose, it's just a complete – and I thought that one
– that was not much on him.
Very little on him. He should have taken that stick he destroyed and taken it to some teammates, but – but still, he's seen it all, so that experience part is certainly in his advantage.
Like even Winnipeg Game 7, though, like to your point, like that was just a – it was a meltdown in the first period by Pekka. Like I wouldn't expect that to happen today if he comes out and he starts. But, you know, we've seen it happen before. So that goes back to the ceiling is really high with Pekka, and I think the floor is something like we saw in the Winnipeg game, or at times we've seen – earlier this year, the Edmonton game stands out when things just completely unravel and it just falls apart totally. Like, say what you want about UC Saros. I haven't really seen a situation where Saros just unravels like that. You know, I just from a mentality standpoint, I think, and we talked earlier this week, like Pekka plays really emotional.
Yes.
And that can be.
He's a more emotional player.
Yeah. And that could be, I think, of his benefit a lot of times. I also think that could play into a detriment as well.
I mean, here's the thing. If Saros starts, I feel confident that the Coyotes' ceiling is three goals.
Yeah.
They'll probably score one or two if Saros starts. I feel like that the way things have gone in the series, what Arizona has, what the Preds have been doing, I think you feel good about two, maybe three goals allowed. So, If you feel like that, then it's like it's on these guys who were such in territorial domination in the last game to convert chances and get more than two or three goals. And so you feel if you feel like they can do that, then I think you feel fine about starting Saros. I think with Rene, the danger is you may need more than that. And now you may need to make a switch in the game. I think it's a gamble, and I understand there are people who say it's worth the gamble. It is time. He is the most likely member of this organization to be in the Hall of Fame. He's a Vezina winner. Like go with that guy right now. I get that, but I think the safer and smarter move is to stick with what you've been doing.
How much do you factor in, like, just knowing Pekka the way that we do? I mean, he's a realist. He knows that his time is quickly coming to an end in the NHL, kind of that motivation of, all right, I've lost my job. I'm coming back in here in game four. This could be the last chance I have to run with something like this. Maybe that brings out the best in him. How much are you tempted if you're John Hines to go that route?
Yeah, maybe. It also, maybe that puts too much pressure on him if he thinks of it that way. I mean, everyone today has to just feel like do whatever you can do to win a game.
Right.
Or it's over, and who knows what happens next. So, but if you're Pecorino, and like you said, it's like, well, next year I'll be the backup. This could be the last chance at doing something the postseason. We were so close. If you think of all those things, I think it's a lot of pressure. Pecorino in Game 7 against Winnipeg looked like a guy who understood the pressure and let it get to him.
Yeah.
I mean, fair or not, that's what it looked like. Now, the last time he played in the playoffs, there was a ton of pressure in Dallas, and he
looked
did
really good.
All he could. So it's just with him, you can find so many examples of both.
Right. No question about it. When we come back, we'll get into this a little bit with Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio and look ahead to Game 4. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stream 102.5 The Game from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill or Google Home, and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. Welcome back in. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad here on Morning Drive. Talking Preds, and to help us do that, we're going to bring in our good friend Justin Bradford from Penalty Box Radio. Justin, what's going on, brother? How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. It's an elimination day for every team, so I'm ready.
Yeah. High-pressure hockey today, my friend. It's going to be fun to watch.
Oh, yeah.
And speaking of that, obviously elimination game, as you brought up, for the Predators in Game 4 today. And we were talking in the last segment, Justin, about the goaltending situation. You know, both Joe and I believed heading into Game 3 that Saros was virtually guaranteed to start that game. I think we're still leaning Saros in Game 4, but I will allow the possibility that Pecorine could get serious consideration in this game. What do you think the pros and cons are to making the decision to go with Rene today if you're John Hines?
You know, I'm right there with you, just in terms of thinking Saros is going to get it, since Saros has been John Hines' guy lately. And overall, I mean, just looking at the numbers, what the season's been like, I know the regular season's so long ago, but Yusuf Saros earned the role that he did. But with Pecorine, I mean, he did look good in the exhibition game. Granted, it was just an exhibition game, so not tested as much as you'd want to see for an entire game. Pecorine is a veteran. He's been in different positions before, but overall in the playoffs, Pecorine hasn't always shown up when he absolutely has to, which is one of those cons. I mean, there's been times we've seen at Pittsburgh, for instance, where Pecorine's been lit up. And granted, this is a completely different situation that it's hard to gauge from, but I still think it's Yusuf Saros today, because he still, I think, is a better opportunity for him to win right now, and you don't want to kill his confidence level or anything. But I do think, if anything, that it's a short leash, and not necessarily a short leash based on Yusuf Saros' performance, but a short leash on the team to make a goaltending change that if he lets in two quick ones, whether it's his fault or the team in front of him's fault, that Pecorine could enter the game very quickly, and it's not going to be a, hey, wait for the third goal to get scored. I think if they're down 2-0 in the first period, then you're going to see Rene come in almost immediately, or at least in the second period, because this is, like we all know, you win or you go home, so you have to make some of those decisions.
Okay, Robbie, so we sometimes, you know, we hear Pete Weber say Saros.
Oh, Bradford is he is linguistic, man.
Well,
he's
but,
got all
so
of it.
So I've never heard we say UC Saros.
We're American.
Bradford's going with the USA Saros.
Well, he's saying it how it they say it over yonder, man.
So you feel good about USA, and also then are you telling me that we're right with Saros? Because I'm questioning myself whenever I talk to Pete Weber.
Yeah, so I try to study the names a lot when coming to this, and even talk to some folks in Finland, especially for some of these names in Sweden as well, to make sure, just like how Porth gave me that weird look when I said Corbinian Holtza the other day. So I try to do my best with the player names to pronounce it the way that they should be pronounced. But yes, I really do think it'll be Saros, just given the way that overall he's performed, and it could be a little risky by throwing Rene in there. But again, I think short leash is what it's going to be.
Go ahead, Bradford. Just do Granlund. We know you're going to do it. Just go ahead and do it.
Oh, Mikael Granlund?
There you go.
You hear that? Granlund.
That's impressive.
I thought it was Granlund. I've heard Granlund or something like that, but you're Granlund. Okay. I'm impressed. Okay, help us rip Chris Martel now. We've been doing this on and off through the show. He says bench Matt Duchene. I say that's ridiculous. But let's talk about more realistic things that you could do with a lineup, Justin. Do you think there's anything like that in the works, possible, possibly beneficial?
I mean, I think things are possible, and it's one of those things that, as we all do, we try to get into the coach's head and what they do, and we all have those opinions of what, hey, we'd love to see this happen, even though we know it's highly unlikely that it won't. So one of those things that I'd like to see is Jared Tinordi come out of the game. I'd like to see Dan Hamhuis in there, just because of his veteran abilities, what he's been through in his career, and not saying that it's necessarily a speedier option, but I think in terms of positioning and putting himself in a position to at least defend better, I think Dan Hamhuis would offer that if he's able to actually go full strength. That's one of those things. And even if you really want to make a big change, I would take both of Tinordi and Weber out and maybe throw in an Alex Carrier, because of his, he has a little bit more speed and offensive upside, even though you're throwing him into an elimination game. That would be tough to do, and that's not going to happen, but that's something that I'd like to see. And then on the other end, I doubt this will happen as well, but I prefer to see Colin Blackwell come into the lineup on the fourth line in replace of Austin Watson, just by adding a little more offensive upside to that. And while Blackwell isn't the biggest dude, and he's willing to get physical, even if it knocks him on his own behind, he's willing to do that as well as an energy guy on the fourth line. But I just think the offensive upside for Blackwell is there. And especially because with Watson, we haven't seen him on the penalty kill for more than maybe 16 seconds per game. And that's been his specialty before. So it's kind of curious. And yes, he did have that big hit on Oliver Ekman-Larsson and everything, but I'd like more offensive upside to come out of there so you can actually have four lines potentially to do that. And maybe, hey, switch up the lineup a little bit and toss it, mix up the fourth and the second line to maybe just spread it out a little bit more, because obviously the second line needs a little bit of a jump.
Justin Bradford from Penalty Box Radio on the line with us. And Justin, we were talking earlier in the show about Matt Duchene and kind of the mentality that he's going to have coming into today's game. How much pressure is on Duchene heading into this game, not just from the offside play in game 3 and the debacle that that was, but it just has not been a good series for Matt Duchene. He's making $8 million a year. How much pressure is on him heading into game four today?
A lot of pressure. He has to be a factor in this game, a good factor. He can't be a bad factor in this game, or that's going to be even worse. He's got to be a factor in this game, and by factor is even if it's at least just an assist and making a primary assist, a great pass to set up a goal, he has to play a factor in winning this game for him to gain even more respect, not just from the fan base, from expectations, to represent what he's earning, that $8 million, like you said. He helped earn that $2 million raise by having a great playoffs for the Columbus Blue Jackets last year, 10 points in 10 games. He was a factor for the Columbus Blue Jackets in beating the Tampa Bay Lightning. He has not been a good factor for the Predators in this series, and he has to be. They're relying on him. The Jofa line has been a factor. They're doing their part, but without depth scoring, this team's not going to win. You can't rely on one line to do it because the Coyotes can shut them down sometimes, and then you have to rely on your other $8 million center to be out there and doing things. You have to rely on your other center that's sometimes playing wing as well to do things with the second line, and you have to rely on Mikael Granlund to also perform, and he has 0 points in this series. So all those factors come into play that they have to come together as a unit. And maybe they had that goal taken away, but it's still not enough. If they have to be a factor in this game, they have to be pushing forward. And we need to see that effort early on. We talk about quick starts. Well, we saw the Jofa line have a very quick start in that last game where they just peppered Darcy Kuemper with shots. They cycled the puck really well. We haven't necessarily seen that from the second line and Duchene's line. If we see things like that, so at least we see the effort in there where they're trying to make themselves a factor, then at least it's a good sign.
Okay, back to the Justin Bradford Nashville Mighty Drunks fantasy lineup. For those who don't know, Justin Bradford is a crushing beer league hockey player.
He is.
Here in Nashville. Now, you mentioned earlier, okay, second line, fourth line. So what would that be specifically if you were doing some sort of a switcheroo? What would that look like?
Heck, I mean, you could always switch up, and I would say this would remind people of Peter Laviolette era, but you could switch Yarncroke and Turris if you want to. But I think a lot of this, and we talked about this, I think, yesterday on Preds Insiders too, is that I think it's the way you approach this with Kyle Turris, if anything, and that it's not a demotion by any means, but it's something that they're trying to mix things up to make people more successful. And I don't think that happened under Peter Laviolette in the way you address a lineup change like this, because obviously we all see that there needs to be some sort of minor shakeup, because you can't mess with the first line. You really don't need to be messing with the third line. So that's the only thing that makes sense without scratching a bunch of players is the second and the fourth. And at least Yarncroke, as we know, can move up and down the lineup and at least play his role as a center if he really needs to, or even as a winger. And he can be responsible at both ends of the ice. That'd be the one thing I can throw out. Do I think it's going to happen? Absolutely not, but that's something that I would recommend.
Justin Bradford, Penalty Box Radio, on the line with us. Justin, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Cool.
Are the Predators going to win today? Do they get it done today in game four and force a game five? What's your prediction?
I think they win today and force a game five, but we've seen this before where when their backs are against a wall like this, they can respond to a loss a lot of times, but then it's stringing together two or three. And that's kind of been the story the past couple of seasons where they have their backs against the wall. They can win one, but can they do it again and can continue that momentum? We all would have thought that after that win that they had, where they probably didn't earn it in the first period, but they found a way to win when you have the bounces go your way, that they could put it together again in the next game, and they looked like it. I mean, they controlled so much of the game, but they couldn't bounce back from the bad things that happened to them. Now they do it in the next game, but can they do that in the next one after that? So I think today would be one of those things where they bounce back and win, but that's the big question mark is what would come on Sunday. Can they actually continue that on? And I just don't see it right now with what we've seen from this team.
Okay, I want to bring up something Robbie said earlier on the show. What did you say? Jim Harbaugh is the most overrated coach in sports? Is that
yes,
something like
that's
that,
what
right?
I said.
I mean, you know that Justin Bradford is a total Harbaugh slappy, right?
I'm aware. I stand by
my
comments.
I'm just fostering conversation. I'm just going to throw that into the air and see what happens.
Whoa! I'm not a slappy.
he doesn't like Harbaugh.
Really?
Well, I mean, I like a lot of things that Harbaugh has stood for and done, but his record is not proving what he needs to be doing.
Thank you. Overrated, exactly as I said.
It's a little more measured. It's not quite the Feinbaum take on Harbaugh, but okay, that's a reasonable Michigan fan take on Jim Harbaugh.
Look,
thank
I'm just
you.
Saying. Overrated, most overrated guy in sports. Justin Bradford from Penalty Box Radio has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Justin, thanks, man, for joining us. We appreciate it.
As always, thanks, boys.
All righty. When we come back, we are going to dive in to Game 4. We will also offer our predictions, put them on the table, on record. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was John Hines discussing the pressure, the environment, everything about heading into an elimination game today against the Arizona Coyotes. Game 4 later today, puck drop 1:30, pregame at 12:30 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe, as much as I loved the way the Predators started Game 3, I did think they could have done a better job of kind of getting in the kitchen, getting in the grill of Darcy Kuemper and making life a little bit more uncomfortable for him than they did. Now, having said that, I mean, they did have the puck directly in front of him in the slot, around the net, beside the net, all these different situations many times in the first period and really throughout the game. But I did think, you know, on some of these other shots that you say, you know, Forsberg's taken from the circle or Forsberg's taken from the slot, having somebody kind of creeping around the net, either waiting for a rebound or taking the eyes away from Kuemper, I think there's room for improvement in that area. You heard Chris Mason talking about it on the broadcast as well. To me, that's got to be a key part of their attack today, in addition to coming out with the same pace and hopefully, for their sake, execution level as they had in Game 3 as well.
Yeah. Would you rather be right in front of the net with the puck and have point-blank opportunities or have the goaltender screened and take shots from outside? I mean, I still would prefer option A.
Yeah,
I'd prefer option A, but
there is a combo you can do, though.
Right, you can do both.
Yeah.
You can do both. So, yeah, and some of it is just the constant, and this has been a thing with this team all year and before this year, is do you have the personnel to get there? And then do they, if you do, then why aren't they getting there more often? It's hard. It's the playoffs. The other guys are completely devoted to not letting you get there.
Yeah.
Like a guy like Duchesne, pretty popular name on this show today.
Yep.
It's a guy I think can be there more often. And, you know, Game 1, he was there at one point, and probably if Turris slides the puck over there, it's a tap-in. But that's a guy I look at. If you're a line that's trying to get on the board and it's all we're talking about and everything, to me, there's one thing that you can do is every chance you get, burrow your way in there and just try to make something happen. And a lot of times, over a period of time, one of those is going to redirect off a stick. You're going to take his eyes away. Something good's going to happen for you.
Well, and some of it is just when you get those opportunities in front of the net like they had in Game 3, you got to bear down and score. Like that's a lot easier said than done. I realize that. Darcy Kuemper was playing extremely well in Game 3. You know, I think Forsberg missed a couple shots by probably an inch and a half either way on the side of the post. Johansson had a great chance in tight. As well as those guys are playing, and I don't mean to disparage them because I think they're playing really well, but some of it is, hey, sometimes when you get these chances, the goalie's playing well, you just got to bear down and execute and play better than him. And it's on some of their guys to do that today as well.
Yeah, and that's where people talk about gripping the sticks, because it's just that split second precision. You've done this a million times as a hockey player. You can place that. These guys can, you know, if they're messing around, they can put it in every
the photographer's
spot
hole
of the
on
net
the, yeah.
that they want to, right? But yeah. There's a little bit of difference when you got someone coming to hit you and maybe the pressure of the situation.
Yeah.
Arvidsson had one too, and I want to say it might have even been after the Turris goal that Duchesne took off the board. Right in the middle of the ice, and it's just if he lifts it, I think there's no way Kuemper gets there. Obviously, just about every time they've gotten to Kuemper, it's going high.
Yeah.
And it's obvious where they're trying to shoot. But on that shot, and he, you know, he gave the, oh, I had it. I mean, he was alone, and if you
got to the slot, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, lift that puck, and it's in. So, hey, Arvidsson's been great in the series, but score more, Arvidsson. Score more, Johansson.
Bear down a little bit.
That's the thing. It's possible that line just keeps playing like it's playing and breaks through more, and that's enough.
Yeah.
But you don't want to rely on that if you're the Predators. You've got to look at that second line and say, guys, either you get on the board or we might all be packing up tonight.
All right, so it's time for predictions. Munson, do you want to be a part of this prediction process, or are you going to leave it to Rex Road and I to make predictions?
Y'all got it.
Okay, so
I'm bad at predictions.
He's going to throw us under the bus and put us on the record. That's fine.
I'm terrible. I predicted the Lakers were going to just sweep this whole 8-game regular season, and you look how that's happening. Yeah. And I also predicted that the 8 seed would go to the Grizzlies and they haven't won a game in the bubble.
So you can't predict Jaren Jackson getting hurt.
Munson's spirit is down on his predictions. We'll leave him out of this for the sake of conversation. Joe, would you like to start or would you like me to go?
Yeah, I'll start. Okay. I'm gonna take Predators 3, Coyotes 2 today. Okay. And I think it's a tied game going to the third, and I think this time it's the Preds. They get the goal, and maybe it turns out 4-2 with an empty netter. But let's say in actual hockey, it's 3-2, okay?
Okay.
And then since we will not be able to preview Sunday's game that will happen if necessary. We don't have a time on that, right? We don't have a potential time.
Not yet.
I'm gonna go 3-2 Arizona. Okay. I think Justin said it in the last segment, you feel like they're going to respond today. Absolute desperation. You got to do it. They're the better team. But I think then the pressure, it's a different kind of pressure of desperation. You're done. Or the pressure of, okay, now you're even and you should have won this series and here you go. Right. The series is yours. It's just a different kind of pressure that I don't think they've handled well. And their inconsistency is something that's just part of what they are as a team until they prove us otherwise. So, I'm going to say they get everyone's hopes up with a win today and then don't finish the job Sunday. Sorry to be a downer.
Half downer.
Half up or half downer.
Rex Road is on record. Okay, they win the day. They lose in game 5. I will couch this by saying I have no confidence in this team really either way. Like there's not anything that could happen, I think, in these next 2 games that would surprise me either way. So I will say that. I'm going to go Preds 4 today. Coyotes 1, with the fourth goal being an empty net goal. I think they'll score late to go up 3-1 in the third period and then get another empty net goal. And I will also go on record, Matt Duchene finds the back of the net today.
Okay.
So Matt Duchene will score today. That's part of my prediction.
Individual prediction.
Individual prediction. Preds 4, Arizona 1. For game 5, again, I have no idea. This team's consistency on a day-to-day basis has not been there. Having said that, I'm going Preds 2, Arizona 1, overtime, game 5. They advance.
Overtime hockey. Okay, so since you're doing individual predictions, are you also predicting that those 2 games will be fully goaltended by Saros?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I think Saros will get both of them. But again, nothing will surprise me in this series anymore. And the reason I think the Predators pull this out, they've been by far, this is different than Dallas last year. They've been by far the better team in this series. It's mental mistakes. It's bad breaks at the wrong time. I have a feeling they win today, and I think they'll be good enough Sunday to get the job done because then that puts Arizona in an elimination game. They don't have a ton of experience with that either. Again, not totally confident in these that I'm saying, but I'm saying Preds come out of here in 5 games with a win. And so now we're against each other and we can compare. That's cool.
Well, but if you're wrong, then we can't rip on you Monday.
So. No, I will be on vacation next week. I'll be back next Friday, so you can rip on me next Friday.
And so according to you, they will be in a round of 16 series at that point that we'll be talking about.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So Justin's coming in Monday. Can we?
I believe Bradford will be in here Monday. So yes.
Can we call you and
call me?
Call you on the beach.
I'll be on the beach. I don't care.
All right. You have your phone?
Yeah, I'll have my phone. You can just rip me. Rip me for 15 minutes on the beach. That's fine.
And maybe, so this is, and there's going to be phone viewing on the beach. Is that right?
Yeah. Sunday, I fully anticipate watching a hockey game from my lounge chair on the beach staring out into the ocean.
That's amazing.
Hopefully not having anybody walk up to me because then I'd have to yell at them in the times we live in.
That sounds
awesome.
Stay
away, Florida man. Don't need you coming up to me.
Hashtag Florida man.
Hashtag Florida man.
Yeah. No Florida.
Gotta watch
man
out
now.
For them. It's been a good week. Been a good show. Preds game later today, 1:30 puck drop, 12:30 pregame here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe, have a good show. Or next week. Have a good weekend. I'll see you when I get back.
You have a good week, sir.
I'll see what I can do. That's it for us today. Darren, Donick, and Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.